As Matthew so eloquently put, I'm going to actually be looking at a UCLA early intervention protocol that we've developed. It's a targeted social communication intervention called JASPER at UCLA, and we actually just recently completed a randomized control trial, so I'm going to talk a little bit about those results today. But first, I need to acknowledge all of my co-collaborators, Dr. Connie Kazri, who served as a principal investigator on this protocol, Dr. Gerhard Hellemann, who is my right-hand statistician, who I appreciate more than you all would know, Dr. Tanya Paparella, who graciously let us access her families in her clinical program for recruitment into this intervention study, and one of our graduate students, Casey Berry, who worked on some of this data with us. And of course, a special thank you to the families and our funding agencies. So as a means of an overview, I'm going to quickly just describe what JASPER is for those of you in the room less familiar. I'm going to talk a bit about the evidence for it, and particularly I'm going to present some new findings from a recently concluded RCT trial. And then in particular, I'm going to really have a focus on what were some of the factors that contributed to change in our primary outcome in the intervention, and that primary outcome was joint engagement. And I'm going to talk a little bit about what that is. So JASPER. Everyone says it stands for different things, but I'm from UCLA, and I'll tell you, it stands for Joint Attention, Symbolic Play, Engagement, and Regulation. And it's a manualized and empirically supported intervention, which really focuses on early, both pre-linguistic, communicative gestures and language, as well as that engagement piece that we think is so important, that social didactic interaction, and play skills. And in particular, JASPER is really interested in children's initiations independently of these skills and their ability to facilitate and maintain social interaction for greater and greater periods of time over the course of the intervention. So the evidence is pretty robust, and this is a slide just summarizing that, so I'm going to kind of breeze through it. We have over 15 years of randomized control trials now. The first were therapist-delivered models with preschoolers. Then we extended into parent-mediated approaches, where we decided we would now, from what we learned about increasing joint attention and play, we would develop strategies to teach parents of younger children on the spectrum. We've also deployed these methods into classrooms by teaching teachers how to implement these strategies, as well as in the symposium prior, you heard a lot about the minimally verbal school-age children that we've also adapted these strategies for. And recently we have an independent replication out of Norway of these findings as well. So why JASPER for toddlers? I probably don't have to convince this crowd, but this approach seems to be, it's naturalistic, it's developmental, it's focused on early core deficits, it's well-suited for young children on the spectrum, it's play-based, it focuses on what happens before language development, so those early joint attention gestures, and it focuses on that early caregiver-child interaction, which we know is so critical for all young children, not just children with ASD. So I'm going to breeze through some main effects of the study, and then I'm going to get into that active ingredient portion. We had 86 parent-child dyads who were randomized to one of two active treatments, so this is a comparative efficacy trial. We randomized children to either receive the JASPER parent-mediated intervention or a parental stress reduction intervention developed by Brereton and Tong. They're both manualized. They both augmented, which I think is a unique feature, an existing 30-hour-a-week early intervention program. So all children were getting what we consider to be state-of-the-art intervention. And we were just looking at, could we, in this program, could we adapt the parent training component? There was actually no formal parent training component in the program. It was all therapist-led. So we were really interested in doing that either through JASPER or through our parental stress reduction intervention. And our primary question was really, could we target in a targeted parent communication intervention, focus on social communication and add benefit to the child in the long run. So these are our children, 43 dyads in each group. You can see they are roughly 2.5 years of age, all presenting with developmental delays. Mothers were around 35 years of age, and were all fairly highly educated. Our main measures that I'm going to talk about throughout the study, so I'll spend a bit of time on that, is mainly coded from a parent-child free play interaction, a 10-minute interaction. Our primary outcome was joint engagement. That was based on the Adamson, Bakeman, and Deckner coding, mutually exclusive engagement state coding that is done continuously throughout the interaction. And it groups children and dyads into specific states of engagement. And we were particularly interested in the amount of time that children were in a joint engagement state. Then I think potentially a very interesting piece of this work is that we then very carefully coded what we called parental active strategy use. We coded those in 1-minute intervals for really the presence or absence of specific strategies, but it wasn't just one strategy. There was a lot of quality indicators that went into the implementation of these strategies, and I'm going to go over that in the next slide. And we ended up with 4 composite strategies that we analyzed. So we're really interested in how parents implement the intervention, but what specific strategies they use that may be related to our outcome, our primary outcome of joint engagement. So the 4 active composite strategies were imitation, communication, prompting, and environmental arrangement. And I was actually part of a pre-conference, the Toddler Treatment Network, and I was struck by the commonality that we all have in identifying these core features of these early social communication interventions, these naturalistic treatments. And we are definitely one of those interventions that have identified, I think, rather common themes in what we think is important for facilitating social communication. Imitation, though, was really descriptively thought about as not only the quantity or the frequency of parent imitating child, but also, was it timed well? Did it happen contingently in space? Where did it happen? Did it happen in a place where the child could actually see that the parent was imitating? Did the parent use quality indicators such as modeling language along with their imitation strategies? We looked at communication, again, how much they did. Did they imitate the child's vocalizations? Did they expand their language use? The pace. We think pace is really important for these children. We want to create a lot of space for our children to initiate communication. So if we have a parent who is talking at too fast a rate, that is going to interfere with the ability for the child both to process and produce language. We also looked at the directiveness. So what parents actually said? What came out of their mouth? Was it a question? Was it a directive? Was it, on the other continuum, a label or a comment about what the child was doing? We looked at prompting, of course, mostly about appropriateness of the prompting. And then environmental arrangement, which I'm sure most of us are familiar with, but it has to do with the structural components of the intervention. How did parents do negotiating all the dynamics of that interaction? Did they select developmentally appropriate toys? Did they position themselves in a particular way to facilitate social communication? We think all of this matters. We also had some measures of buy-in, and I'm just going to quickly, these are published in previous papers of ours. We had both a therapist-rated level of buy-in that we did weekly across the intervention, the 10-week intervention, and then we also had a parent-rated perception of how they felt they and their child was doing over the course of intervention. So, boom, we're going to the results now. So our primary effect of joint engagement, we did find a main effect of treatment by time and interaction, so that our Jasper treatment engaged in longer and longer episodes of joint engagement compared to that comparative condition, and that was maintained at a 6-month follow-up. That's the first graph on the right. Sorry, I don't have a clicker, I don't think. Well, maybe I do, but now I can't use it. And then on the left of your screen, We actually looked at those classroom interactions. So what we did is, this is a generalized measure of joint engagement, so we brought it into the classroom and we said, we're going to come in and we're going to look at how that child interacts with their teacher who was blinded to treatment status as well as did not have any knowledge of any of our treatments. So it's truly a blind, informant. And we found that, again, our Jasper children generalized to that novel teacher and have greater gains in joint engagement from pre to post intervention. And we think that's a particularly exciting generalized finding from this intervention project. We also found, again, changes in involvement, so changes in the therapist-rated buy-in of the family over time, and changes in the parent-reported efficacy of implementing these strategies over time in favor of the Jasper condition as well. And for those parental strategies I talked about, those four main components, you can see at baseline, they're doing roughly similar amounts. So for the most part, most parents are doing the best in implementing environmental arrangement strategies, and they're doing the least frequently those imitation strategies we talked about across conditions. And at exit to the study, you can see that the Jasper parents are doing significantly more strategies, implementing them significantly more effectively across all four of the strategies. And these were all significant findings, group differences. So lastly, I was really interested in what predicted specifically the use of joint engagement. And so or the increases in joint engagement that we saw, so our primary outcomes. So I did a series of stepwise regressions. These were all, hypothesis-driven. Each step I sectioned out by what I thought was important at each level, and each set of predictors were forced into the model. And then after each regression was run, anything significant from that model was kept in each subsequent model. So step one were child and parent basic demographics, things like chronological age, gender, ethnicity, parents' age, parents' education. Step two, developmental characteristics, language ability, developmental ability, parental factors as well, such as their stress levels, how well they thought they were doing in intervention. Step three were specific treatment characteristics that we thought may matter, things like dose, how long did it take families to complete intervention. We think about this sometimes as a proxy of buy-in. If families take a really long time to implement the entire intervention or drop early, that may be a sign that they're not as bought in. As well as in step four, we inputted those parental active strategies that we thought were going to be very important. It's important for the maintenance of joint engagement. And finally, we forced in treatment assignment. So what did we find? Oh, little funny lines. I'm going to add them. So for step one, the demographics, we found that actually none of the demographic variables predicted the change in joint engagement we saw in these dyads over time. Step two, we found that 8% of the variability in the change in joint engagement was attributed to by the initial parent perception of how the child was doing overall in intervention. And I think this is really critical, and I'm going to talk about why we think this might be in the discussion section. Next, we found that actually the therapist rating of the parent's fidelity and efficacy during the intervention contributed an additional 5% to the change in that joint engagement. And then actually, surprisingly or happily, I should say, a whopping 30% of that variability was actually explained by those specific parent strategies I talked about. In particular, the two significant strategies for maintaining joint engagement over time were the environmental arrangement, the change in the environmental arrangement, and the change in imitation strategies. Those two seem to be the most important predicting these changes in joint engagement. And then lastly, when we force treatment in, that treatment alone explained an extra 12% of the variability. And you might say, well, what was that? Well, that means that we may not be very good at measuring exactly what's happening in treatment all the time. And we need to know there's still a little window that we need to kind of better understand what's the active ingredients of treatment, what's actually going on. And with such a heterogeneous population, we can only imagine. And then, of course, because we can't explain everything in these regressions, there was definitely a portion of unexplained variance in the change of joint engagement. So to wrap up and to think about discussion points, I think that one important thing to think about is, you know, and this has been reiterated again and again in the autism research, but parents really are keen observers of their child's behaviors. They are pretty good reporters of how their children are doing, how their children are changing and responding with treatment. And I think that's really important because how well they initially thought children would do in the intervention actually predicted how well they did. So, I mean, that's a pretty valid measure and an important one for us to think about. In addition, you know, we replicated previous work where, you know, most of us in the room and could agree that as therapists working with children, we usually have a pretty good sense of who's improving and who's doing better over time. And this, again, was borne out in this model where therapists were accurately able to explain some of that change in joint engagement over time. I think perhaps the most exciting finding is looking at kind of what we consider core features or core components, active ingredients of interventions, and starting to understand how they play a role in these primary outcomes. I want to remind you this is only one outcome. I only looked at joint engagement, but we could essentially apply this to any range of outcomes. And maybe we might see different composites of strategies working differently for different outcomes. For the maintenance and change in joint engagement, we found that two of the four active strategies seem to really play a big role. And that was that environmental arrangement cluster we talked about, as well as that imitation. And it's more than just imitation, it's all that imitation quality. It's the timing, it's the pacing, it's, you know, did that parent really do it in a contingent manner? And I think that really matters. You know, and really, I think we are struck as a field by trying to understand what is in this black box of treatment and what does it mean and what's working. And this gets us one step closer. But of course, there's still, I had an exhaustive list of predictors we talked about, and it still doesn't account for everything that treatment did in order to change joint engagement. So I think that's an interesting thing for us to ponder. So in conclusion, we know that early identification and intervention is really critical, but I think as a field, we know very little about how interventions are actually affecting these changes in children with ASD, and I think it's an important thing for us to move forward into. We need to be able to test and conceptualize and think about the mechanisms by which children change and the variabilities in their change in order to better develop these treatments for children on the autism spectrum. Thank you.
All right, so we actually have a good amount of time for questions now. So I'd encourage folks to use our microphones, but if not, if you're too far from microphones, just wave your hand and speak up.
Is your outcome a joint intention with the parent, with the classroom, or both?
Good question. This primary outcome was with This primary outcome, I'm not using my mic, is with in the parent-child dyad. Yep. Oh, I think there's someone over there. Yeah.
Hi. You talked about mechanisms, and I wonder if you have some thoughts about what the brain mechanisms that might be happening in your intervention.
Oh, I'm not a brain person. Where's Shefali Jesse? She's my brain person. You know, I don't know much about the brain. I can't speak to it. I do know that, you know, we're trying to understand how the brain and behavior are linked together at UCLA by understanding and thinking about biomarkers of change in treatment. So in a new trial that we're doing at UCLA with babies, we call it Baby Jasper. So clever. We're actually doing EEG pre and post treatment to better understand and characterize how that brain is changing with treatment, because I don't actually think we know. Okay.
Thank you for a wonderful presentation. Have you considered combining stress reduction and Jasper in one group?
Yes. Actually, we have, because the finding that I didn't report on, and I tried to cut down, so I'm going to be really brief, is that in this comparative efficacy trial, what I think is the most one of the interesting findings of that is that the stress reduction intervention actually did something active as well. It actually reduced stress in our parents better than the Jasper condition. So we actually have a true comparative efficacy trial, which excites me, where two different active treatments do differentially different things. And I think that informs how we might combine approaches in the future, just as you had mentioned. Thank you.